This is the British Bulldog, and you're listening to Joner Radio.
Hey, this is Gavin Rosdale, and you're listening to Joner Radio.
Hey, this is Kieran Knightley, and you're listening to Joner Radio.
If this is going to be that kind of party, I'm going to stick my dick in the mashed potato.
Nailed it! Out here, it's just a little bit stranger.
Get off the cross, dude.
It gets a lot colder.
Hanging out with your friends.
Hey, welcome to another episode. Thanks for tuning in directly on time. It's crazy that you tuned your radio dial exactly when the show was starting. To Joner Ray, Dio can't make it because he's off fighting the good fight. Cash Hartzell is here.
Hey, everybody. It's me.
Hail and hell. Oh, that's right. You don't do that.
I don't
anymore.
Do that now that I'm married. It's,
that's right. Your whole new it. Thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Neil's here.
I'm here.
Have you stabbed yourself with a knife lately?
What constitutes lately?
All right. Well, in the gauge of a week, I'd say.
Oh, no. Last time, still the same.
Okay, great.
It's all healed.
It's all healed up? Oh, you're like a slow-paced Wolverine.
or a fast-paced Neil Mahoney.
Sure. Our guest for today, he's been in many things. You don't have what?
For some reason, I thought I had the bad band version of that 2001 song.
Do you want me to do it?
Yeah.
You sure? Okay.
I'm sure glad we whipped through. We got that open just right so we could argue about this.
This is Joner Radio, home to the over 2.5 hours podcast length, which our guest loves. You might have seen him in Terriers. No.
Nope.
What was that one called? The one that was like Terriers. Roswell?
I don't know.
It was a cop show.
Fargo.
Good guys.
Oh. They didn't have TV for a long time.
Yeah. It wasn't on TV for very long.
Yes, that's right.
So it was exactly like Terriers.
That's right, exactly. That's why you probably mixed it up. He also got the role that I auditioned for in Fargo, the TV series.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Oh,
I was
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's...
Ladies and gentlemen, Paul and Hank.
Okay. Oh, hey.
I want to go back to... You should go back to whoever that agent was.
I don't know. There was a time that I was just getting stuff in, get sent out for stuff that wasn't right for me. And when I did it, I was like, there's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way I'm getting this. And then when I saw...
That's the attitude.
Well, I mean, I'm just going based on facts.
I know a few working actors. That actually is the attitude.
Oh, okay. And it's, you're never right for any of this stuff until all of a sudden someone says, you got it. And you went, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. That's you know, it's funny because I was like trying to... I was going back because it's like there's. I know a bunch of stuff you've been in, but you've been hitting like you just you're in a ton of stuff. They had the whole season of Dexter,
yeah,
which thankfully for you wasn't the last season.
No, I don't even. I think
it was the second to last
sixth season. Yeah, second to last.
Yeah.
Because they had eight. Yeah.
Yeah.
That math is sound.
You got out just in time.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently. Yeah. I pop up. I like to. Yeah. Like whack-a-mole.
It's neat. It's like you're becoming like it's like a character actor guy, but like you're also like leading man style. So it's kind of the amount of work you get is.
The way I think about it is like every time the window is closed, I just like roll up with a crowbar and just prop it open for just a little bit longer.
And then swipe that pie.
Just a
that's
little
cool
bit
enough.
Longer. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's funny when it comes to like being in this town and auditioning for other tall white guy roles. I mean, I have my gripes against a delightful guy, great actor, Nelson Franklin.
Yes.
But I'm sure he hates you. So. So that's the thing that comforts me every
but
time.
I've lost things to Nelson, so
have you really?
All, yeah, it evens out.
So he was like, so what's you guys have been going back and forth, and now Taron Killam's in the mix.
I know. It was great when he was just in New York.
Yeah exactly.
Yeah.
I know.
When he left SNL, I was like, oh no.
No, he's here now. Oh,
yeah.
Shit. Okay.
Yeah. When Pete Holmes' show got canceled, I was like, oh, he's back in the market. but we don't care about your long past as a accomplished actor. We're here because you make things.
Mm-hmm.
You make handkerchiefs.
I make just one of many things. Yeah.
Yes, but like that's a I thought that was really cool.
kerchiefs.
Kerchiefs.
Hank's kerchiefs.
Yes, Hank's kerchiefs.
Hank's kerchiefs.
I can tell you're a man of letters because they're Hank's kerchiefs and not Hankies.
Like, not Hankies.
Not Hankies.
Very, yeah, yeah, yeah. And there was a whole big thing when we were like starting. They were like, I don't know, Hank's kerchiefs is kind of a mouthful. I'm like, just call them Hank's kerchiefs. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easy breezy.
And when I was binging how to spell handkerchiefs, I didn't realize it was handkerchiefs.
Yeah.
Like, not many people know that. Yeah. Everyone calls them handkerchiefs.
Yeah.
But they're actually handkerchiefs.
And this is just something you're into because you're kind of a rock and roll guy and you like the idea of shoving fabric into a pocket.
Always. Yeah, yeah. No. I've just, literally, I've always carried them. I've always had them. And I was sitting at a San Francisco Giants game.
You guys are both Giants fans.
Mm-hmm. Both Giants fans. And there are two things I always try and buy whenever I'm out. Like about, I'm looking for beer koozies or kerchiefs, bandanas, whatever you want to call them.
Which you could also use as a beer koozie.
Yes, exactly, yeah. In times of need. And so they had beer koozies at the Giants game, but they didn't have any kerchiefs. So I went back to my seat and I went, that's a way to never come into money. Start a handkerchief company.
Yeah.
And so I was just
so you're still
enough.
In the red is what you're saying.
I was just unemployed enough to try and do it. Yeah. And actually I did it. And now it's kind of like a full-fledged like thing now.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's cool. I remember I was thinking I thought I was going to have some time, and that's when I wanted to start like a record label, and I was like, I'll have time to do the work. And then I started and immediately started working.
Of course.
And then I had no time to really do anything with it, and it's now it's just kind of there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then if Paige Weldon wants to put out a record, that's I do it then. But that's about all I've been doing
it's
so
like an
far.
Exercise bike in the corner of the room. Yeah. Just a bunch of clothes thrown over.
Yeah. It's still getting some use.
Yeah.
That's where the dry cleaning goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just on the bike.
Yeah, but you're also a rock and roll aficionado.
Yep.
You're friends with the desert rock scene. You're part of that scene, right?
I'm friendly with some, not all. Yes.
Yes. Ooh.
Ooh.
No. No. Just in that.
No.
Ooh, I don't know all of them.
Oh shit.
I don't know everyone in the scene.
Yeah. But. But yeah, that's something I think just that's the kind of the neat thing about social media is just like you kind of see people's interests and like seeing like the shows you would go to and where you would post from or the things you would respond to when someone else would say something about music.
Absolutely.
It's kind of, that's my favorite thing about it.
Yeah. The other day, like I had posted this clip I had seen of Stevie Ray Vaughan breaking a string in the middle of an Austin City Limits performance, and he just keeps playing, no problem. I'll do a solo with five strings, and then luckily because he's playing the blues, like he doesn't have to play guitar during the verse, so he just sings the verse, and he just like nods over to his roadie, and they do this like a flawless guitar exchange in which he skips no beats, and it's actually like fucking impressive.
Yeah,
and I just like put that out, and then Dan Harmon said, like, I started watching this clip because Colin's into music, but then I saw something that was kind of beautiful or something along those lines. And I was just like, oh, geez.
1,400 word blog later.
Somehow, like, he just, you know, somehow the word is out that that's one of my interests.
Yeah. And that guitar tech's name, Dean Del Rey. I'm just going to say, I want to do a movie where Dean Del Rey is just just the Zelig. Of all time rock and roll.
Candles lit.
Del Razors, man. But we're going to be hanging out. You going to stick around after the break?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, great. We're going to be playing some music that is submitted. If you want your music submitted and played on this show, please send it to Jonah Radio, JonahRaydio @gmail.com. This is something that was sent into us and amongst us. This is a perfect conversation. This is Poppy Robbie with Devil is a Woman from the Troubled Times of Samuel Heck EP.
Around. Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I grumba. This is Bart Simpson, dude, and you're listening to Jonah Radio.
Hey, all right. Thank you so much.
That one wasn't bad.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
That's when we had Nancy Cartwright on the show.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Nancy Cartwright.
Nancy Cartwright. Yeah.
Nancy Cartwright, Yearly Smith.
Wait, which one does
Hank Azaria?
Hank Azaria.
Right.
Yeah. Dan Castellaneta. Who does Marge? Julie Kavner.
Julie.
She was in that movie. She was in like a coming of age movie. She played a mom who was a stand up comic.
It's the main character.
It's called like My Life or That's So My Life or something like that.
Remember
that?
Is that the Neil Hamburger story?
No, that's my life.
That's a salty banana.
All right. Well, Colin, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this show. I'm sure you are. but this is the part of the show where we delve into the world of
music news.
That's right. It's time to talk about news and how it regards to the world of music.
In connection to
a
lot of impeachment stuff this week.
No. That was last week.
The news is back in town.
The Nuge.
Huey Lewis broke down outside, though.
The Nuge is back in town. He's confused. He's lost.
Oh,
you gotta
man.
Hide your daughters.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And your crossbow targets.
He married a guy's...
Well, everybody marries somebody's daughter unless they don't.
He married like a 16-year-old and had to take guardianship in order to do it.
Ooh. I thought you were going to say he married someone's crossbow.
I'm sure he did that, too.
Guys, sad news out of the world of San Francisco music. Metallica had to cancel a tour because James Hetfield went back into rehab.
Heard about this.
Yes. Which is a bummer because, like, being a fan of the band and seeing him, like, seem very happy the past, you know, decade or so since Saint Anger.
Yeah. I mean, even longer than that, right?
It's been a bit, maybe.
It's
like,
probably, it's, it feels like 10, but it's probably like 20 years.
Oh, God, I know.
That's the weird thing.
Yeah, but
what birthday did Neil took you to see Some Kind of Monster for your birthday?
For my birthday.
What birthday was
it? God, it must have been, I guess I was 24 or something like that.
How old do you know?
Oh.
37.
15 years?
These are all just
that's
guesses.
That's not math.
Yeah, but the other members released a statement saying, as most of you probably know, our brother James has been struggling with addiction on and off for many years. This is what we're hearing is a bluegrassy version of Nothing Else Matters from Steve and Seagulls. Steven Seagulls, but anyway, they have a whole cover album.
Now I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a floater. Takes a while.
Before we delve any more into this, it is a bummer that James is having trouble still. Are you, because you're like a San Francisco Bay Area guy.
Yeah, and originally from Northern California.
Yeah. SACTO, right?
Yes.
Yes. do you know Steve Malcolmus?
No.
Oh, okay. do you know the guys from 7 Seconds?
No.
This is the rest of the show.
That's fair. Tough but fair.
Do you know cake?
I eat it every now and again.
Yay! But
Isaac,
you don't know Metallica.
Talica?
Oh yeah, the towel.
Never understood that. Like, why apostrophe capital T? Like, just spell out Metallica.
Save a lot of time. You save a lot of time using that hyphen before.
I don't think so. You know, Metallica has always been about you tell us, which has always been the only knock I have on Metallica.
Here's the thing. I think it's a way for them to go, it's not just Metallica. It's you to us, Talica.
Yes, it's us, Talica.
But yeah.
Or as our Spanish brethren say, it's two Talica.
Two Talica.
Yeah.
That's when there's too much Talica.
Or Usted Talica, if it's you're being formal about
it. Newstead. No, poor Newstead.
Oh.
Poor Jason Newstead.
Oh.
I think he's doing fine.
I think, yeah. What was that? Mushroom Head? What was that band he did for a bit?
Oh,
I think that
was it. Yeah. No, it's not Mushroom Head, but it's like that.
Oysterhead.
That was Primus's guy.
Yeah, that was Primus and one of the dudes from Fish.
Stuart Copeland and Trey from Fish.
Oh, that's right. What was the band? There was a band where it was like Chris Novoselic, the other two guys from Sublime, and then maybe Jason Newsted. It was like, it was all the other, it was like,
oh,
the,
I do remember the something other guy.
It was called like HBO's Leftovers or something. I can't remember. yeah, I think the only bright side of this is that we might get, when he gets out of rehab, we might get another, some kind of monster, like a sequel.
Maybe.
I mean, those guys made three movies on the Paradise Lost. That's a Paradise Lost is a trilogy. Maybe there could be some kind of monster trilogy.
You know, the craziest thing about that movie is I remember the scene where he's come back from rehab. And Bob Rock is like, they see the camera and they're like, what's with the camera? Are we really doing this? And, yeah. And Bob Rock's like, I don't know, man. I don't know. But a fucking amazing documentary.
It's great.
Super sad that obviously that he
is back
to
in,
go back.
Yes,
and
yes.
Hopefully that he.
With that said.
Yes.
I thought you had a good joke. No. It was going to be mean.
No.
I hope this therapist, they let
give
write,
lyrics?
Yeah,
that's
write
the best scene,
song.
I think.
Oh,
best scene in that movie.
And it's like, it's as subtle as the best Christopher Guest scene ever, where it's like, he doesn't move his chair away, he just pivots it away after realizing what he's given him is lyrical ideas.
And the pitch is like, all right, so so it's a therapist and he's wearing Cosby sweaters. Just slips some lyrics surreptitiously and Lars catches it and gets super pissed.
Oh god.
And he's there to be like a family therapist for the band.
Yeah, but then talks about going on tour and how much he's gonna charge him. Anyway, if you haven't seen it, it is fantastic. Guys, Billy Corgan going on a solo tour. But we'll play Smashing Pumpkins songs. What's the difference? I want to know the difference of any other, like, you know, he's only ever had, like, what, Jimmy Chamberlain? If Jimmy Chamberlain along with him?
Yeah, well, who else was in the, what is it? Not Swan, but Zwan.
Yeah. That was really, there was a guy, wasn't fucking dude from Slint was in Zwan.
Yeah, he was, the drummer?
Rick Walford?
No.
But he was
David Pajo.
But he was like 13 years old or something like that. He was like super young. Was that what it was?
No, because he was young. They were all young way
we've
before.
We've all been young at some point. We
hey,
so
hey slow
Pumpkins
down.
Pumpkins were smashed.
So young.
Yes.
Town.
It's the 12 Date Run will feature songs from across Corgan's discography with Smashing Pumpkins and Zwan.
Oh,
and his solo releases.
Snooze.
Yeah, I don't know. Here's the thing. I've seen Liam Gallagher. I'm going to see him again. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with him playing Oasis songs.
That
I like
works.
It. What?
Yeah, that works.
It works.
It works.
Yeah, definitely. Did I talk about how I saw that the As You Were?
Yep.
Yeah. It's propaganda, man.
No, it's about Liam Gallagher.
It's about yeah. But it's like about Liam Gallagher. It's a whole like thing. But it's like I'm convinced that they gave I'm convinced that they've given a ton of money to Bonehead from Oasis to basically just say Liam's the better one. It's like because now there's this like huge groundswell of support for Liam when he used to be like, well, Noel wrote all the songs. Everyone wants to feel sorry for the writer.
But the moment that I really truly like no longer really officially gave a shit and but actually really enjoyed Liam was the video where he was talking about making tea.
Oh yeah.
And he was talking about now in the 90s we had like three fucking guys.
Yeah, we had three tea. Blokes.
Yeah. That was I was like, all right, I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah,
I just want you guys to figure this shit out, please.
Yeah, he's fucking great. So, guys, here's a weird one. Moby helped Congress's investigation of the Donald Trump Deutsche Bank situation.
Well, of course. Did they need vegan catering, and he came to their rescue? Was that their problem?
This seems like another thing Moby's trying to do to make people forget about
the weird thing with girls.
Creep thing he did with
what's her face?
What's her face from Star Wars?
Oh yeah, she was in Star Wars.
Yeah.
You ever auditioned for a Star Wars?
I took a meeting.
I liked you trying to keep up.
I'm trying to. You guys are fast. You guys are real quick. I've been up since 5 a.m. I had a meeting for a Star Wars.
Which one?
The Attack of the Clones.
Oh, shit.
I went and had a meeting with somebody, and you talked about everything but Star Wars. Mm. And it was pretty much like every actor at that time. So it was Nelson Franklin, Aaron Kennedy, the like. And that was, yeah, that was it. That was, yeah, just, that was as far as it went.
Yeah, that's a...
Bullet dodge!
No, you, I mean, get at this one. Point,
they're giving them out like candy these days.
Yeah, you, yeah, just get
can't
it.
Can't get those auditions, but I got that one back.
Yeah, a report published on October 1st by the New York Times reveals a curious tidbit about the House Intelligence Committee's respective probe into these alleged hijinks. Moby assisted a little bit with the investigation. The electronic producer who did not respond to Spin's request for comment is a constituent and friend of the committee's chairman, Adam Schiff.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Who loves.
Schiff probably represents Moby's district.
District, which yeah, he has a Little Pine, his restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
His vegan restaurant. District. That's your district.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, twice in the last week, people have given me directions that have included that restaurant. I don't know where it is.
When you see Little Pine.
Yes, exactly.
Just keep going.
Keep going. Mm. Make a right at Little Pine.
Does it say what he actually did?
The musician introduced Schiff to Val Brokesmith, the adopted son of late Deutsche Bank executive William Brokesmith. The younger Brokesmith had internal bank documents from his parents' computers, which he obtained after William's death. So it was, I think it was a little meaty meat thing.
This is like a cut scene from Less Than Zero. Is like a bunch of fucking teenagers partying. Moby, they hired Moby to DJ, or maybe he just heard about a teen party and he swung by and he met this fucking 15-year-old who stole a bunch of documents from his parents' computer.
Yeah,
and he's like, I know a congressman. Come here.
Yeah.
Oh boy. So recently, here's some hockey news for you guys. By the way, Neil brought some Pink Whitney, which is a hockey vodka.
Season starts tonight, boys.
Yeah, season opener, boys.
Oh, they got to get that, boys.
Hitter batter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Got to put the puck on net.
Smelch?
Schmelt.
Schmelt.
Yeah.
Are you a Letterkenny fan?
So who?
Letterkenny.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
What?
You'll like it. It's a show on Hulu from Canada.
Oh,
you'll love it. It's great.
Yeah, okay.
Hockey forward.
Oh, I like that.
So Green Day announced NHL partnership.
That's right.
They prepped the new song Fire Ready Aim.
Get it?
Yeah. Oh. And so they're going to be, the arenas have been playing Holiday and Know Your Enemy for years, but this coming season, hold on, do they have a song called Know Your Enemy, or do they just...
They do, yeah. That
okay.
was on the American Idiote.
Okay, so...
I think.
Yeah, maybe, because Know Your Enemy, when I hear that, I just think of Rage Against the Machine.
Of course.
Which, Green Day's had a weird thing over the years of like pulling riffs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, listeners, you might know about American Idiot, the song, stealing a riff from Dillinger Four, who they had just the previous summer gone on a Japanese tour with. So here's a... This is, of course, American Idiot. And coming up next, Dillinger Four.
Wow.
Can we get this to Schiff?
Get Moby on the horn.
It's a shifty shift.
Shifty shift.
Via Moby. Via Moby Mobs.
It'll be perfect, too, because he can put one record on one turntable and one record on the other.
But here's another thing that our friend Jimmy, the drummer from Toys That Kill, Mike Felix, he just talked about the new single, Father of All, from Green Day, which, of course, is their latest single on the new album coming up. So here's a drum beat from We Control the Sun by Toys That Kill. Coming up after this interlude. Prelude?
Prelude.
Prelude.
Prelude. Okay. So that's Toys That Kill. And then here's Green Day.
It's also a Jimi Hendrix, Mitch Mitchell.
That's a good point, yeah. Which goes to show,
that's Green Day?
There's not much you can do. Yeah, that's Green Day's new single.
Have they ever done falsetto before?
I don't think so.
Good for them. They're expanding. Bringing out that toolbox.
you know, it's one of those things. Billy Joe has always like started those little side project bands that don't sound like Green Day. So maybe he's just kind of going like, eh, just can make more money if I just.
They can do whatever the fuck they want.
At this point?
At this point, they can do whatever the fuck they want.
They're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yep.
They've done a great service to supporting the scene they came from.
They own like half of downtown Oakland.
Yeah, exactly. They've helped Gilman Street stay alive. Like, they've helped out the guy from Larry Livermore, who started Lookout Records, who gave him their first record deal. Like, they've helped him out a lot.
They changed the face of Broadway.
They did.
There would be no producers the musical.
No, not at all.
Recently, Weezer
drama for a living.
Weezer made Dave Grohl cry with their cover of Nirvana's Lithium.
Yes.
Made
not
him
the
cry.
Reason that you think.
Which
you would assume that it would be a really bad cover and it would make him cry.
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it was good. It was good.
See, guys, I'm fast now. Yeah,
you've been up since five.
You guys, speed up. Yes. Come on.
Sorry
catch up
about
with
that.
Me.
I was expecting a bigger reaction than that.
But also, at that same show, which is the Rock and Rio, I believe, which Tenacious D is at right now, the Strokes had Eddie Vedder come out and they did a
the Strokes were in town last week.
No, that was the Ohana Festival.
Oh, that was the Ohana Festival. Yes. That's right. I'm sorry.
Where's
that? That the Weezer thing happened at
the Weezer thing happened at Rock and Rio where the D was.
Yeah, so the Strokes had Eddie Vedder come out and sing Juicebox with them, which is pretty great. So let's skip to that. It works.
I saw him play this song with them in 2006.
Oh shit.
Like a and it's insane how well he fit in.
It fucking works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is it right here.
It's really good.
It's fucking
really
fits.
It's really, really good.
All of a sudden it sounds like a Pearl Jam song.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw the Strokes at like one of those radio festivals in Washington, D.C. in 2001. And this girl was like bombing towards the front of the stage. And I was like, all right, I'll just make way. And like she really like ran into me and then like climbed up and then like crowd surfed to the front. And what I realized moments later was she stole my wallet.
Oh, shit.
So she stole my wallet, crowd surfed to the front, gets like helped out by the security. Then went back around and just was like ripping wallets all day.
Oh, fucking A.
That's amazing.
Like, what a hustle.
Last night.
You know, I thought I had downloaded this, but let's see if it still plays. This is, I'm not sure if you guys know this, but Take a Bear Share. For the newest season of Peaky Blinders, they had Snoop Dogg.
Oh, yeah.
Do a cover of Red Right Hand by Nick Cave. And I realize I'm surprised that no one's used this for a beat before. Or sample.
When I heard this, I was like, this beat is great.
Yeah.
That is great.
You don't have no money.
Everything else so get is not,
it's
so,
not
great.
So great.
But that beat is fantastic.
Yeah.
Also, Snoop Dogg, it's been a long time.
He shouldn't have left you without a dope beat to step to.
Well, don't you worry, buddy. Is he a Crip or a Blood?
He's a Crip.
He's a Crip. How can you like they won't say Red most of the time. I mean, that might be why. Like, he may have had this idea in 1994, and he's like, yeah, I can't say Red. I won't do it.
Oh my God! Did Snoop Dogg come up with the show Peaky Blinders and he sat on it?
Yes.
And just
gave it to somebody else via Moby.
Via Moby.
And then it's like, I'm going to do a remix.
It's funny because when I was looking up, of course, we all know the original version from the good old
Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
But a lot of people have covered this. Arctic Monkeys did a cover of it. Doing their Arctic Monkeys thing.
I've never heard this.
Yeah.
Is this off of one of their albums, or is it
This is off of the Crying Lightning EP. That's a good take on it, I think.
Yeah. The lyrics work significantly better.
Yes, yeah.
Kind of Alex Turner's mouth.
Very true.
Crooning.
Fiddlar, our friends in Fiddlar did it at some radio show.
These guys are kind of fearless as far as covers. They will do everything.
This really has that radio show sound to it.
Echoey?
Yeah.
That's a great cover.
Yeah. Also, Pete Yorn for the Hellboy soundtrack in 2004.
What?
Oh, this is...
This might be the version I'm most familiar with.
Really? Yeah.
Wow. Big Hellboy fan? This is played on the radio, right?
I don't know. This is just sounds the closest to the original.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that just sounds like it. I was going to say, it sounds like the original with a guy who's trying to get his voice as low as I can. Let me inhale some xenon.
And then, of course, Iggy Pop and Jarvis Cocker from Pulp did a version.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems an Iggy Pop's wheel.
So Red Right Hand has become a standard in, I guess, the rock world.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It does even have that sort of jazz level to it where it's very simple melodically but complex. Yeah, I said that.
Yeah, so that's we love a good cover here. That was a bunch of them in a row.
Just makes me want to walk in slow motion through Birmingham.
Nobody picked that for walking in slow motion.
When I hear that song, I immediately think because it shows up in the Dumb and Dumber movie. It's like with like they have a few bucks to their name, and then Jim Carrey's off to go get like supplies like for the house, and then you know Jeff Bridges goes like, "Don't get anything dumb," and then it's a hard cut to right when the song starts, like you know with the bell, and it's a Jim Carrey with the big foam cowboy hat and the box of beers.
I remember this. I remember the look of it.
Yeah, and he gets his wallet stuck in the...
Really?
Yeah, that's what's playing is Red Right Hand.
We should do that for the next time we have to do... We're doing another one of those needle drop replaces.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's a good
that
one.
That specific scene that he vaguely remembered.
Yeah, that one.
That I just remember that. Well, it's the hat.
It's the hat. The hat.
It's funny.
The paddle. Yeah.
Big hat. It's funny.
That was the dentist who contributed $40,000 to the budget.
I'm willing to bet that's what that Star Wars meeting was like too. Talking about the hat scene.
Turd Ferguson.
No, it is. It's funny. It's big hat.
It's funny. It's a big hat. The Dumb and Dumber soundtrack. I remember fucking getting that. It was really good.
You want me to look it up?
I think there was a good green jello.
Look it up. This is the part in the podcast where someone has to look something up.
This is
every podcast ever recorded. Look it up.
Man. Yeah, you're really going against podcasting today, are you? earlier, no podcasts have to be 2.5 hours.
Well, can I tell you why?
Sure.
Because I'll be honest here. And there are plenty of podcasts that I've been on that have been much longer than 2 hours. And they were very fun to do. Whether they're fun to listen to, I don't know. Mm. I don't want to hear myself talk for that long. But if there's like a funny comedian and it's like, oh, he's got a podcast. I want to check that out. And then I look and it's 2.5 hours. Like, do you want to spend 2.5 hours with someone to decide if you like them?
Yeah. Are you sub-talking Pete Holmes right now? Or?
No, I'm not.
That's a
no, because that would make it weird.
It's a
like that. I don't
not
have
funny
to
as
be.
Kumail.
I'm not going to be in the car for 2.5 hours in a day.
Good point.
Yeah. So we're gonna. This is a two-parter.
Yeah.
Over the course of a couple of days.
Listen to it on the way to work. On the
way
back.
That's insane.
You've probably done some jobs where you have a long commute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying. This show is, we're barely cracking an hour these days, but boy, oh boy, did we used to be long.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, we used to be really, really drunk.
We used to get really, really drunk.
And nobody wants those to end, right, guys? Nothing makes you endear a drunk.
Did you find them? Did you find it?
Yes.
See what we did? We talked over it, and now it's not. It's almost like he had it ready to go.
All right.
I knew what you were doing.
Kick it off with a Crash Test Dummy song, The Ballad of Peter Pumpkinhead.
Now, here's the thing. That song doesn't show up in the movie. Like, shows up in the movie.
That is in the movie, but the Peter Pumpkinhead.
I don't think
right.
it's in the movie. Yeah.
Dead Eye Dick with New Age Girl.
She don't eat meat, but she sure liked the bone. Wow. Did we remember this song?
I do.
Dun, 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 rough.
Yeah, it was.
I got a new age girl.
Yep.
Tell us what she's like.
Like my ninth grade, whatever, like bus trip to school, they would play it on the morning radio.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah, wow, you were like that in nine.
Well, it's just like it's such a fucking ham-fisted joke lyric.
Well, it's just the one. She don't eat meat, but she sure like the bone.
Yeah, it was just like, ugh, that's so gross.
Yeah. What else they got?
The Primitives with Crash. Gigolo Ants with Where I Find My Heaven. A cover of Hurdy Gurdy Man by the Butthole Surfers.
This is a really $5.99 Super Saver disc.
It really
Galaxy of Stars.
This is a cassette tape at a truck stop.
A Green Jelly song, the Bear song.
Yeah, the bear went over the mountain to see what he could see. The other side of the mountain was all that he could see. So he went back over the mountain to see what he could see. The other side of the mountain was all that he could see. Which I believe was their take on Buddhism. It's almost, it could be a reference to Donovan. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is.
Well, you got Hurdy Gurdy Man on it on this already. So
there
maybe,
you go.
Maybe there's some whole Donovan subplot.
And that Hurdy Gurdy Man from Butthole Surfers, that's the one that goes like, that one.
Get Ready by the Proclaimers. And of course, You Sexy Thing by D-Light.
Hold on. There's another Proclaimer song?
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, it just says, Get God. Ready.
And then what was the last one?
You Sexy Thing.
You Sexy. Oh, yeah, yeah.
D-Light.
D-Light. That's a good soundtrack.
D-Light.
This is just a soundtrack.
That's,
like
how,
you said,
that's how it's pronounced.
No, the light is short. The light is short. You got the D right.
Yeah.
No, there are three E's in D-Light.
Yeah. Yeah.
Four, actually, if you count the one at the end.
New York City.
I wasn't at first, but now I am.
Guys, they are going to be re-releasing a special edition of the best MTV Unplugged ever, Nirvana Unplugged. And it's going to be on vinyl, and they're adding some of the rehearsal tracks for Come As You Are, Polly, Plateau, Pennyroyal Tea, and The Man Who Sold the World. That is their best album. I know it's like half covers.
Yeah.
And not really their sound, but I feel it's like it's what would have happened eventually.
Yeah. Definitely.
And I was talking about this with our friend Aaron Baker over the weekend, and the amount of introduction that album does to other bands is crazy. You got Bowie, you got who, if you were 14, you might have no idea it was.
You definitely don't know that song.
No, not at all. You Lead Belly, really don't know, and then the Meat Puppets.
Which, and then also the Vaselines, they had already covered. But
Just such an introduction to like, oh, if you like us, go find these other bands.
Well, and you could play that album for anyone.
Oh,
and they'd be like, oh, I like this.
Yeah.
This is good. Whereas, you know, I'm not sure if you play like the original, you know, radio-friendly
Unit Shifter. Yeah.
I don't think everyone's going to be like, ooh, I like this.
Yeah, yeah, you know, exactly.
Who is Frances Farmer and why does she need revenge?
What's that Frances Farmer get against Seattle?
Definitely the best record. Do I need those other five songs? Sure.
I'll like to hear the alternate version.
Yeah, totally.
I was never, you know. It's if they weren't on there, the rehearsals. So I don't know what could be so different from there.
I believe Kurt did it in Espanol.
I like how he even starts like, this is from our first album. A lot of people don't know it.
By the way, released in 1989.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that.
Bleach.
That's from the 80s.
Yeah, that's an 80s record.
Oh, wow.
It's funny when you listen to that too. You're like it's like if you put some of those like Bleach songs next to any of that other sub pop coming out at that time, I wouldn't have been able to really tell the difference.
Well, dude, so I'm sort of working on a project, and one of the things that I've been doing is trying to come up with like a mixtape, and it's a project that takes place in like the spring of 1990. And so we're making like a mixtape of things that would have been like released around that time or within like the year prior.
Yeah.
And we put a Nirvana song on there. And when you listen to some of the other stuff that was released in 1989, when that was like, it is such a, insane outlier.
Yeah.
Like even more so than anything that was released in 1991. Because by 91, there's enough other stuff that is kind of in the same kind of vein.
Yeah.
That is kind of as popular as they are, or yeah, like on par. But then there's also like Escapade by Janet Jackson.
Yeah.
And, you know, Vogue and all of these songs. So it's like when you hear something, you go, geez, that was 1989.
Yeah.
And then within, you know, a few years.
What's neat about that, there's always
the world.
There's a thing that I've noticed, like there's always a band that's hard that people just kind of all of a sudden get, like that happened with the Mets. I remember like the Mets were just like really noisy and loud, but like their shows were filling out with all kinds of people. Like, yeah, like people, I always kind of gauge it. It's like, I have a friend who's like mainly into hip hop. He likes a lot of music, but he mainly loves like Atlanta, Dirty South kind of trap hip hop stuff. But it's like, but then he's like, hey, he'll always go to me. He's like, you ever heard the Mets? And so there's bands, and I think Queens of the Stone Age was one of those bands. Mm-hmm. Yep. They were just like, they're a noisy, loud band that like everyone just collectively is like, oh, but when it comes to the noisy rock stuff, we like these guys.
Yeah, for sure.
And they kind of get picked.
Yeah.
Almost. Caius didn't get picked, but no, Queens did.
Queens did, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they had hooks, man.
It helps to have a good singer.
Yeah,
like
that's true.
A melodic singer.
Yeah, I guess that that's
helps.
It.
That does help.
And come in from the desert, guys. Play some shows in town. That's really when they took off.
Don't remind me of that Pappy and Harriet's experience.
That was a lot of animal feces. But that is it for our music news segment for this episode. That's right. We got it. We figured it all out. Everything got done. We're going to take a quick break. Are you going to stick around after the break?
I'm not.
Okay, great.
Hey, awesome. Colin, have you ever heard this song?
Baby, how long will you keep me in the penalty box?
No.
Baby, I'm wrong.
It's Dave the Hammer Schultz from the Broadway, Broad Street Bullies.
Oh, my God.
He put out a 7-inch in like 1970.
Oh, I'm definitely sticking around.
Nice tease.
All right. We are going to play a song from the Bougie Boys. They're out of Canada. I love them so much. Here's a song, Calling. I'll be right back with more Colin Hanks. Okay, that was Bougie Boys. We're still here with Colin Hanks from a very many things. Life in Pieces is the new one?
No, that
God
was canceled.
Damn it. It was canceled. God, shit.
It's all right. It had been on for 4 years. It had a good run.
I will say this. I used to work at CBS.
Yeah?
And
CVS.
I
used to sell a lot of the DVDs of the episodes.
CBS.
I work at Television City, and there was, you know, they got that whole long hallway on both sides. It's all shows
Oh, yeah?
that are up there. You guys beat everybody on the wall.
Are you serious?
In the 3 years.
Really?
When
because
I was
those were probably the only places where there were posters for that show. That's incredible.
Well, Letterman was on that wall too, and it was kind of amazing. You outlasted him.
Whoa.
I mean, you only because you came back 1 year and he left that
year.
Yeah. But
oh my goodness.
Yeah. No, everybody on the wall.
We were just talking about the last time we saw each other. Your movie, your doc on Tower Records came out after that time we were in.
Shortly.
But that was your night, so you were kind of scattered. I just said hi. And then,
you were there.
I was there.
Yeah, at the party.
And there was a party,
Yeah, that was like, that was 4 years ago.
God damn it. That's crazy.
Almost like to the day.
What's it like to throw a party that literally changes the landscape of Los Angeles? Those fucking signs are still up there.
I cannot believe that they've still kept those up.
There must be people in there and they're just like, cool, we'll be in the Tower Building. Like that, it's like this weird non-official branding.
Gibson had the lease and they were very kind and they like helped us throw the party and they let us repaint it. And then in an effort I can't say enough nice things about them. They kept it up for as long as they could. And
I guess for listeners, there was a legendary Tower Records on Sunset Boulevard that went out of business.
All Things Must Pass, a documentary on Tower Records, and that was kind of the focal point. That was the one.
That was like the,
that was like Rock and Roll Ralph's.
In Los Angeles. Yes, exactly. Rock and Roll Ralph's.
I saw Brian Setzer doing in-store there without the orchestra.
Oh. Hey. But so Gibson just always kept the signage up and kept our poster up in the window for the longest time. And like even when Guns N' Roses came in and they did their first big concert they still kept our poster up, which is fucking insane. So a big thank you to the people at Gibson for doing that.
Shows to go, what a good documentary you made. You brought it back in people's mind. They're like, we want to celebrate this.
Yeah. Well, it is a very good documentary.
Thanks, man.
Is it available streaming anywhere? Or?
Yeah. It's on iTunes and Voodoo or
Hoodoo
and all of those places.
And it's what I like about it is it's like a almost acts as like a bunch of mini rock docs.
Yeah,
just because of all the people involved over time, and it just has like a bunch of little mini stories throughout the history of the
pretty much
thing, which is fucking fantastic. Are you going to do any more documentaries or that thing you were talking about, the mixtape? Is that a doc? Or?
Well, no, that's not a doc. That's just something else that I'm trying to make up out of nowhere.
Another doc you did. You did the Crazy Crab documentary for ESPN.com, which was great.
That's a Giants fan right there. Absolutely.
And it's a great story that I've always loved. It was a mascot that everybody fucking hated.
Like, it was a mascot designed to be hated.
And, oh, really?
Yeah.
It was in the 80s when the Giants were not too dissimilar to this past season. They were horrible, and as for an advertising campaign, they came up with this like fake poll where they said like, we polled everyone in San Francisco about whether they wanted a mascot, and everyone said no, so we gave one to them anyways. It was like designed to be super cheesy because this is like the era of like the Philly Fanatic and the San Diego Chicken and all that sort of stuff. So they came up with a character called the Crazy Crab, which was designed to be horrible. And they did it for this commercial, and the team was so bad that they needed to come up with any excuse to like entertain what few fans they had at Candlestick that year. So they're like, well, we still have this costume. Let's just get that guy back out and have him run out. And like, it was like kind of like a hit in that people fucking hated him and would like throw batteries at him and like bags full of piss and stuff.
Oh my God.
Like, it was really.
The players would do it too. Like, the players didn't like him either.
Yeah. And the guy, it's crazy. The guy, Wayne Dobo was his name. He was actually a trained mime.
Oh,
man. And he was in Scarface.
What?
Do you remember the scene in the
nightclub?
In the nightclub.
And there's those guys with the weird mask.
Yeah.
He's the guy in the weird mask that gets shot up, and then Scarface uses his dead body as like cover.
So he was kind of used to, being used as a shield by an organization.
But it was a 30 for 30 short doc that we did.
That's great.
And then you also did, I have not seen it, but it was, It was not Queens, but
The Eagles of Death Metal Doc.
Eagles of Death Metal Doc.
Oh, that's right. You went back to Paris, or yeah. not Paris, but
Paris. Yeah.
That must have been really an emotional.
That one was rough. That one was really, really hard. That one has sort of like took me out of the doc loop for a while because it was just a little too hard.
Yeah, yeah.
I can imagine you're there, you're friends with these guys, you're going through it with them, and then you immediately have to go like, well, now I have to go and post and like figure out how to show this emotional experience to be.
Yeah, I mean, nothing about that one was easy, and nor is it supposed to be. You know, in the large scheme of things, it's not that bad. I had to make a movie. That's all I had to do. Yeah. But interview your friends that you don't want to ask them these questions, but you have to. That's the agreement that you guys have. That's super hard, and I thought that was going to be the hardest thing, and then I went and met a whole bunch of strangers and had to do that, and I wasn't really mentally prepared for that, but the spirit in which we tried to sort of tackle that thing and like really the goal of that was to show everyone sort of putting their lives back together and trying to move on and using the film as a way to help do that, you know, not like just going in and like cannibalizing their story, but actually trying to be a part of their healing process. That was sort of like the goal. And when I was
really
done with that, I said, cool, I'm done for a while. I'm going to go do Life in Pieces for another 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fall down. So.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's gnarly. Did you ever play music?
I did, yeah. I played bass in...
No, but did you ever play like actual music?
Yeah.
Oh.
Solid bass
joke.
Tough
but fair. Yeah, I played bands in high school and college. You know,
what kind of stuff?
Really, really horrible, bad stuff.
Yeah?
The high school
You're
band...
You were Nazi bands? That's crazy.
No, the high school band, I can't even really describe what... It was just like an amalgamation of just like all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it was just...
So you're like early 90s high school?
Yeah. It was like 93. I graduated in 96. So
yeah, okay.
Like that. And so it was basically just like...
Ska?
No, there was no ska, thank God. But it was
hear that, Cash? How does that make you feel, Cash?
It makes me feel a little, but we were in different places in different times. He was in like Sacramento in 96 and I was in Santa Cruz in 98, so there's just you can't compare the two. Totally there's at least like three or four bridges in between there.
You know what, I'll
he's
say
got
this.
The Delta to deal with, I've got the Bay.
I'll say this about ska: no more joyous music that shit upon more.
That is true.
It gets people dancing. It's usually pretty positive, and people hate it.
People love to shit on it.
They really do.
It's down, it will pick you up.
That is absolutely 100% true.
So were you like playing covers, or were you trying to?
Like, we would do like a weird. We did like a weird Primus cover that didn't really sound like Primus at all.
That's a big swing for some kids. That are just
no, it was really
six string or four string
it was
bass.
Really dumb. four string bass, which didn't really make much sense.
It's tough to do.
It was just kind of like this weird hodgepodge of not quite grunge, not quite like Smashing Pumpkins. It was just kids literally not knowing what they were doing,
and
sort of figuring it out, but not like a good kind of not knowing what they're doing and figuring it out. It's like, no, we'll try and put like six chords in, you know. It was just really just kind of an excuse to fuck around with instruments. And then in college, it was like not quite a. It was live hip hop to a degree, but not like the Roots. But then not like Limp Bizkit. It was like kind of like little bit somewhere in between.
Yeah, Martin Starr still has like I think a little group. Where it's like a Roots-ish, like live really? Hip-hop stuff that he rapped.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of like kind of, there was, like one.
Like an LL Cool J MTV Unplugged, really.
Rewind that.
You're remembering the exact part of tape that I'm remembering.
Exactly. Rewind the tape and we all had white deodorant on.
Foamy pits.
Yeah.
Foamy Pits, which is the ironically the name of his band in high school.
Boo.
Oh. What was your first concert?
March 5th, 1990, Arco Arena, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers on the Full Moon Fever tour.
Holy shit. And we're saying this, we're recording this on Tom Petty's birthday, I think is today.
Well, it's his death.
It's his death birthday. Oh, shit. Yeah. I was there. I was at that last show.
I was there too. Yeah.
That's right.
That's right, because
that's where you guys saw each other.
No, we didn't see each other. We were we did see.
I think
each
we waved at each other.
We waved at each other.
Yeah.
And that Josh last show, wanted to the beat third you night. Up at the in the parking lot.
That's right. That's right. We had a whole bit.
Yeah. It was a bit. He didn't really want to.
But yeah, that's right. It was death. This is. Oh yeah, that's crazy. Wait, that means when I texted you this week, it must have been. Like, because I texted you about going to the day he died, I was DJing Tom Petty songs at Footsie's on Figueroa.
Oh, that's right.
And I was like, hey, if you want somewhere to go to just like listen
that's
and talk.
Right. That's
like
right. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. So Full Moon Fever Tour, Lenny Kravitz opened up.
Hey.
Let Love Rule Lenny Kravitz as opposed to the later Lenny Kravitz.
Like the soul singer.
Kravitz. Yeah. More Beatles.
Going to go my way.
Yeah.
Not that.
But like.
But the more Beatles.
It ain't over till it's over. Was that around then?
It ain't over till it's over.
Oh, no. Was it that? No. It was even before that.
I didn't know him before that.
Yeah. The first time I'd ever even heard of him was Are You Gonna Go My Way?
Yeah. He had this weird, an album. I think it was called Let Love Rule, I want to say. Yeah.
That sounds about right. Sounds like something you'd hear on Alice.
We've already wasted our look 'em up for
I burned that card. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's tough. Selfish. But fair. Tough but fair.
Fucking Google it, dog.
All right. So we know you have your Hank's kerchiefs business.
Yes.
You're still trying to get it into the stratosphere.
Yes.
So we're gonna pitch you some kind of jingles or commercials or songs you can use.
Ooh, fabulous!
For this, I'll go first.
Okay.
All right. Cool. So this is something we can. It's rough. It's a rough idea.
Okay.
Do you do too many drugs and sweat and have blood coming out of your nose? Well, you're in luck. Colin Hanks from Orange County has now put out his own line of Hanks kerchiefs. You can now dust away the cocaine upon your nose and look good while doing it. All while being at the height of fashion with these ready-made, American-made classic kerchiefs. What do you think?
I think there's a lot of room for improvement.
Okay.
But
I can
fabulous start.
Mention cocaine more.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. More. Yeah. Really drive home the bloody noses.
Yeah.
Really
feel good in the summer, guys.
Need the kerchief for the most.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Okay.
But I like it.
Okay. Great. Yeah. It's just like I said. It's just a rough thing. Because you want the rock and rollers in there.
Exactly.
And of course, the song you would use, you could get that song because that's from Queens of the Stone Age. That's the first Queen song I ever heard.
That's just a text away.
Yeah. Exactly.
So. I don't mean to blow these guys out of the water, but let me Don Draper you.
Okay.
You know what? I'm gonna mute that channel while I'm going through my
taking control.
I'm just saying, it's all about exclusivity these days. Oof. You want
Draper
handmade. You want celebrity endorsed, mm-hmm. but more than celebrity endorsed, you want very, very specific subcultures. That's why I'm saying you put together the Blood Splatter collection, signature Hanks kerchiefs from Christian Camargo, Jamie Murray, Jimmy Smits, John Lithgow, Johnny Lee Miller, Edwards James Olmos, and you. That's every single season villain from Dexter, each with their own blood splatter pattern that come out monthly from Hanks kerchiefs.
A monthly.
You get the new one monthly.
That Don Draper monthly-esque thing.
Yeah.
That's
kerchief. And of course,
kerchief of the month.
I forgot.
For the kerchief.
Oh no. Hey.
Oh, was that not implied?
Oh.
And this was my song. This is what you got to do the pitch underneath.
This is great. It's called a callback.
Of course,
this is the original version that we haven't heard.
They got the red right hand. They got the bloody hand. That's what you use handkerchiefs
for. Callback. It's funny.
You wipe it off.
It's funny. Yep. It's good. It's funny.
It's good. See, that ties in a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Sort of a Rorschach test of bloody kerchiefs.
Yeah, you don't want any of the main cast in there. You just want single season arc.
Yeah, you could do a box set of it. You could also, this is stuff you could sell at Comic-Con, GalaxyCon, Walker Stalker.
All of the cons.
BlizzCon.
The convention about blizzards?
Yes, exactly.
Meteorologist blizzard, right?
Yes. Not that convention. Fun.
I think there are multiple ways to make red dots look cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. I'm on board.
See how you do it, Neil.
Buying it in the room.
Okay.
It's the best meeting I've ever
thank you
had.
For contracting Mahoney Partners Limited. Mm-hmm. And we have a presentation for you today.
Don't limit your partners.
Well, they're extremely limited at this point. First off, I'd like to apologize for parking to your space. I'm sorry I was late. When we talk about kerchiefs, we're talking about accessories for men. It's not something that we normally think about when we think of accessories.
Mm-hmm.
Daily carries.
Mm-hmm. Daily carries, I like
yeah.
that.
So for imagery, we think about what's a masculine accessory for? And you see a man, he's changed a tire, he's wiping off his hands, he's tending to a skid knee of a child. Poultice. He's
God.
Maybe he's used a pocket knife to slice open a box of musk-scented body wash and sticks it through his hand on the night before his friend's wedding.
Good.
Specific metaphor, very specific.
Use so what you know.
Just picture like kind of like light moments of our lives music under that. And then what comes to the rescue in each moment? A Hank's kerchief. And then you wipe up all those things with like is that I'm feeling a positive hit on this.
I think you got it sold, Neil. Don't oversell it now.
That one's pretty good. Yeah. If we can get someone doing wipe up, that's the
who are
one
we kidding?
Voice.
Largo that's... Connections. It's gonna be this.
Keep a handkerchief in your pocket.
Oh,
that was my father's rule.
It Nick Offerman?
Yeah.
What?
And it saved my bacon.
I fucking totally forgot about this.
Because when I'd get whooped in a fight, I'd never soil the floor.
This will probably be the one you have to use.
Round my knife handle tight, and even the fucking score.
How am I just hearing this for the first time?
I think this was on a special. Is this the one that Jordan Vaux Roberts directed?
Yeah, it was on
American Ham?
Or when yeah. You
break oh, shit.
Yeah.
Erase the prince from where you've been. For gravy or mutter, even...
That's the real-life Ron Swanson.
That is.
Yeah, that's Nick Offerman. Ron Swanson.
Oh, man, he'd sell much more than any of the ideas that we've come up with here.
Yeah, probably. I feel like I need to get a Nick Offerman
endorsement.
Endorsement.
He's got to design a kerchief.
Well, after you're done with the red right hand.
Of course.
Well, you don't have to.
Of course.
Yeah, I was one of my ideas was at first I was going to do talking about like you know the culture of sticking the handkerchief like in different pockets.
Yeah, cruising.
And I was going to play. Girls and Boys by Blur, and I'd be like, it's like in this day and age of lots of different genders, you'll never know who you're going to be talking to. With a Hank's kerchief, you can now be wave it as a flag.
You were just taking the gay subcultural thing and just moving it to pronouns, so you know which.
Yeah, exactly.
That is brilliant, Jonah. That's a great idea.
I was going to go with leader of the pack from the Scorpio Rising, Kenneth Anger.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I had another one that was it's handkerchiefs for people who don't use them right now, and it's the gutter punk handkerchief. It comes in three colors: Gilman Gray, Green Day Green, and Operation Ivy Camo.
There you go.
And it comes in a dividable three parts, so you can make a subhumans patch out of it if you need to.
I didn't have time to do it because I thought of it on the way, but I was gonna look up some peace punk Chinese band and just go, do you not want the government knowing who you are while you protest them? Thanks, kerchiefs.
When we launched, I everything about this has been very sort of like just me coming up with like ideas and basically just leaning super hard on people. Like, hey, will you help me do this? And
yeah.
One of the first people I went to was Liam Lynch,
who did Syphil and Ollie.
Syphil and Ollie and tons of stuff. He's a super funny guy.
Pick of Destiny director?
Pick of Destiny, yeah. Director of the D movie. And we came up with this commercial that was basically like kind of like an infomercial. But it was basically like all of the different uses for kerchiefs. Nice. And it starts off pretty legit. And I had Steve Agee like as the model, like showing it off. And then they just get progressively weirder and weirder.
Oh, great.
The more like as the list goes on and sort of ends with like, you know, like a sleeping bag for baguettes or a literal banana hammock. And like Liam actually like tore up a kerchief and like made an actual hammock.
Oh God!
Put a banana in it. So yeah, there's plenty of uses for these kerchiefs.
They are genuinely. It was one of those things where I'm not one to like. It's like when you first posted about it.
Yeah.
I wasn't like, I was like, what is this? I was like, oh, let me see these.
Yeah.
Just let me check it out as a guy that I like. And then I was like, shit, I don't use kerchiefs, but I might have to get some. Like there's that. And also, I'll be honest, I think we're all a little disappointed you didn't bring some for the podcast.
You want to know what's so funny? Is that I had three set aside on my desk, and then my kids distracted me. So,
yeah.
Fuck you, kids.
Hey, I just got to say, if there is one podcast that you need to consult with when you put together a handkerchief company, it is Jesse Thorne's podcast. But we're glad that you came to this one.
I got one.
I got one of the new ones. This
ooh,
is
this is this out yet? Yeah. Ooh,
yeah,
J. Crew one.
Oh yeah.
Actually, one of my prized possessions is a The Cowboy Way bandana that I got from Blockbuster when I worked there in '97.
Oh, the movie The Cowboy.
The movie The Cowboy Way. It has names.
Yeah, I got two nice ones and a bunch of shit ones.
I just got some embroidered ones.
I'll send you guys some.
Ooh.
Oh, great. This worked out.
Yep.
Went to plan.
Yeah. Everything. My brow has been sweating.
We only had to talk to him for 2.5 hours.
He's got a knife.
That's it for the show.
No.
What?
Yep.
No.
I told you, this is
I'll
a tight...
I'll stick around for the next segment.
Baby. How long will you keep me in the penalty box?
All right, so
opening day, NHL.
Have you sent this over to Tony Thaxton yet?
What?
You sent it over to Tony Thaxton yet? He should do it now.
Yeah, he's got a billion rules. Yeah, it's only a 7-inch, too. So
and was really, this was released when?
Like 75, I think.
75. So this is like way before the Super Bowl shuffle that shit.
And it was it sold like 100,000.
Really?
Did really well in Philadelphia.
Of course.
But like, yeah. And it has like a ballad on the B-side.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's wow. Really,
have you been listening to Tony Thaxton's podcast?
No.
Bizarre Albums. It's great. He just, it's like he did one on Terry Bradshaw's country album. Did one on Simpsons Sing the Blues.
Oh,
did
then,
one on
wow.
Chipmunk Punk.
The George Martin album.
Now you can't go to the boat show.
Yeah.
Wham. Ka-psh, raining on me. I always thought that was the fucking raddest fucking rant. Like, yeah, it's like, totally. Went over, it was like something went over a sprinkler head and wham, ka-psh, raining on me.
Exactly.
That's fucking, that's a good album.
It's actually not that bad.
Look at all those idiots.
Considering that is a novelty Simpsons album released at the height of Simpson mania.
The first like 1990 or something like that.
Yeah.
Where it's just popular.
Yes.
But it's not like so smart, dude. Listen.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
It's not that wave.
Exactly.
That first wave of just like.
It's still setting the plate for Parker Lewis Can't Lose, or what was that show?
Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Yeah,
with Kubiak.
Kubiak.
Yeah.
Kubiak.
The only thing I remember from that, besides synchronized swatches, was like they ordered like a ton of pizzas, and Kubiak ate them all. And then like just like gallons and gallons of Jell-O from some prank they were trying to do, like lands and fills up a classroom, and then he starts eating it. They're like, Coop, you just ate a bunch of pizzas. Why are you getting, you still hungry? He's like, there's always room for Jell-O. Freeze frame, credits roll, show canceled.
that dude, Adrian Ben-Ruby, I always see at the most out there shows. Like I've seen him at Man Man 4 or 5 times.
Wait, Kubiak?
Kubiak.
Yeah. Oh shit.
Yeah, Adrian Ben-Ruby. He went on to play.
He was in ER for a long time.
Yeah,
he was on ER for a long time. I remember seeing him at a bunch of shows. Yeah. Who is the other guy? Not Parker Lewis, not Kubiak.
The guy with the glasses?
The guy with the coat. He would pull all the stuff out of the coat.
He's almost like a rockabilly type dude.
Oh. Man, we really burned that card.
We burned that card. It doesn't fucking matter.
And I remember it was like the year after Parker Lewis came out, they tried to do the Ferris Bueller TV show.
Oh, yeah. With his face from the George Burns body swap movie?
Patrick Dempsey.
No, not Patrick Dempsey.
He's not the guy from 18 Again?
No.
That's the George Burns body swap movie, 18 Again.
No, it's not.
18 Again?
Heart and Souls? No, that wasn't.
No.
Okay, so you got, here's your body swapping movies from that era. You got 18 Again with George Burns and whoever that guy is.
That dude I'm talking about.
But is the movie 18 Again?
Yeah, the George Burns one.
Yeah, because he did it's not Patrick Dempsey.
Imitation of George Burns, but it's not Patrick Dempsey.
Okay.
There's a Patrick Dempsey doppelganger guy that I can't remember his name.
Yeah, and
it's
was
not
he the,
John Cryer.
What about like Can't Buy Me Love? Was that, who's that?
That's Patrick Dempsey. Yeah, but there's no body swapping in that.
But there's also like sort of body swap movies. We got Like Father, Like Son.
Yeah,
Fred Savage.
No.
Kirk Cameron.
Vice Versa is Fred Savage and Judge Reinhold.
Yes. Charlie Schlatter was the guy in 18 Again.
I was never going to fucking come up with that, Jonah. I was never going to make that one. That one was never going to come
up.
He
was reoccurring on Diagnosis Murder after that. And yes, he was the lead in the short-lived Ferris Bueller TV show.
I remember how they opened that. Like, he's talking to the camera, doing the whole Ferris Bueller thing.
And then he said, the Diagnosis Murder.
But they do a thing where he goes, like, he pulls it. He's like, I might not look like the Ferris Bueller you remember from the movie. And it's like a cutout of Matthew Broderick as Ferris Bueller. And he's like, this is another kind of Ferris Bueller. And then he pulls out a chainsaw and then saws the cardboard standee in half. That was the opening of it.
Let's just end the show now.
Thank you so much, Colin Hanks,
for coming out to the show.
Making it all the way out to South Pasadena, California, the hard streets of South Pasadena.
Beautiful. South Pasadena.
Which, of course, is now, it's October, so it's become now Haddonfield. I forget the name of the town from... Because this is where they shot most of Halloween, the original Halloween. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Haddondale. Fuck, I've
never seen one of those movies.
Part three is a standalone. It's fucking great. Tom Atkins.
Really?
And his mustached glory.
They all occur on October 31st.
Yeah. Well, that was the idea. That was his idea from the original. It wasn't supposed to be like Michael Myers throughout the whole thing. It was supposed to be like Halloween was just an anthology thing.
Which is why Season of the Witch is different, right?
That's why Season of the Witch, which is part three, which is like this, like it's like a fucking private investigator is investigating this small town where all these... weird Halloween masks are coming from, and it's this like Irish mob family that's kind of running it, and it turns out like people who have the masks on, like they're gonna explode on Halloween. It's a crazy movie.
Wow. So that's how Moby got the information.
That's how Moby got from the shifty ship.
Good one.
All right. They can find you online at Colin Hanks.
Yep.
Buy some Hanks kerchiefs.
HanksKerchiefs.com.
Watch All Things Must Pass.
Yep. iTunes.
Watch
Nosa Me. Eagles of Death Metal, Nosa Me.
Yeah, that's on HBO?
Yeah, but it's also available on Shout DVD.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
There you go.
So I noticed you're doing very subtle, like, it's like, yeah, it's on iTunes. It's on Shout DVD.
Well,
the things you get money for.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you can get the Eagles doc on iTunes, but I know that you can get it on DVD.
Okay. Do people ever come up to you and think that you made a documentary about the other Eagles?
No, but they always get confused because I always just refer to it as Eagles, and they go like, "Wait, you made a documentary about the Eagles?"
Well, they're more the Eagles of death.
Yeah. Eagles of death metal.
I have three pieces of vinyl from what's the singer's name from Eagles of Death Metal?
Jesse. Hughes.
Jesse. It was basically a bar close. It was a beauty bar back in those days on Cahuenga. And he and like we kind of had some similar friends. And everyone's like, oh, we're going home, we're going home. He turns to me, he's like, hey man, I don't want to get into it, but I can't sleep for a while. Do you want to go get some food or something?
Good run, Randy. I can't sleep yet. Yeah, that's
I don't want to get into it. Yeah.
And so we went to Astro Family Restaurant. And then drove that way because I was like, that's kind of near where I live. He's like, all right. And then we ate food and talked a bunch. He talked a bunch.
Yeah.
And then he ran to his car, gave me three records.
Gives you free shit?
Yeah.
Every time I see Jesse, he gives me stuff.
Yeah.
And I go, Jesse, I don't need. I know. Just take it.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm at a point now where people give me something. I go, I can't. I have nowhere to put this.
I have no place to put this.
I'm sorry. Me and my wife are just paring down the things we own. Mm-hmm. Just stuff stacking up. You care so much.
Did you watch that lady's show where she tells you how to get rid of stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sparks Joy.
No, Sparks Nevada.
Sparks Joy. Different show. Yeah. All right. That's good. It's called, I can't remember the name of it, but it's all about, like, yeah. But that's the thing. She's like, if it sparks joy, you keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. We expect you to post and tweet about this and Instagram about this.
I will. I mean, no one's going to tweet about it.
I like how we're doing this on air now.
No, we have to hold people accountable now.
hold people accountable. Yeah.
But thanks for, if you want your music played on this show, email it to us, jonahradio@gmail.com. If you want to do a station ID as a celebrity, doesn't matter if you're good or not, send us that there as well. Thank you for everyone that's been listening. Jonah. Check out the bands that you've heard.
Jonah, solicit advertisers.
If you want to advertise on the show, email
jsmith@starburnsind.com.
Real easy. We'll put it on the thing. If you have a business and you want to do it, let us know. Send us your stuff. I didn't want to bring this up earlier in the show. A sad day in music is today. Kim Shattuck from the Muffs and from the Pandoras, one of the best voices in rock and roll. She finally succumbed. She finally died from ALS. And so I saw them many times. They're great. So we're gonna end with "Sad Tomorrow" from Blonder and Blonder. Rest in peace, Kim Shattuck. Check out the Muffs. They're a great band. Goodbye, everybody.
I don't even know why. Do you think I'm a mess? Maybe someday without you're gone. When I do as I please, I'm indifferent to me. Am I crazy or have good luck?